प्रणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू अवर भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी कंप्लीटेड 13th चैप्टर इन आवर लास्ट क्लास एंड नाउ वी आर लुकिंग एट द 14th चैप्टर। टू अंडरस्टैंड द लिंक बिटवीन द 13th एंड द 14th चैप्टर्स, लेट्स हैव अ क्विक रिव्यू ऑफ द 13 chapters conclusion. 13 chapter, the last section was gaining jnana chakshu. So there is 27 to 35. So 27th basically said everything is a combination of matter and spirit. 28th stated that by this we can see, when we see the spiritual, there is equal vision. So see everything material equally to attain liberation. To yati param gatim. So at material level there is difference, but we see it equally because we see beyond matter to the spirit. And then see that spirit is the non-doer, that was 30th verse. See that all material variety originates in spiritual similarity. That is the 31st verse, that is the abhut prathak bhavam. Then see that the soul always remains transcendental and doesn't get entangled and doesn't act. Na karoti na lipyate. And then how that is na karoti and na lipyate? That is talked about in the next two verses. And then lastly, the benefit is told that if one gets this jnana chakshu, one will attain liberation. So now, in this overview, the important point is to recognize that this whole analysis is implying a good level of understanding of the modes. Anadityatvan, nirgunatvan. The gunas do not affect a person, or the soul remains transcendental to the gunas. And before that also, it is told that because of contact with the gunas that the soul becomes bound. So in 13.22, the Bija Vakya, as it has often been called, Purusha Prakriti Sthohi Bhungte Prakriti Jan Gunan Karanam Gunasangosya Sadasad Yoni Janmasu. So Karanam Gunasangosya, because of association with the three modes. What happens because of it? Sadasad Yoni Janmasu, that one meets with good and bad in various species. So Karanam Gunasangosya. So that means Gunasanga is the cause of bondage, and the soul is originally Nirgunatvan, is originally transcendental, and the soul similarly goes beyond the influence of the modes, one becomes free from bondage. So basically, the modes are considered to be the critical factors which bring about the bondage. We can't say they are the cause of the bondage. The cause is bhunti, the cause of the soul's desire to enjoy the material world, but the way in which that bondage is executed is through the modes. So recognizing this enables one to develop some seriousness in knowing what are the modes. So now the modes are the mechanism by which the soul is bound within material existence. So that will be explained. That means the transcendental souls, entanglement in material existence will be explained. This topic has not yet been explained anywhere in the Gita in detail. In the mechanism, earlier it has been talked about how one should stay detached while practicing spiritual life, while living in the material world also, while doing one's professional duties, varanashram duties, how one should remain detached and how one can transcend. That is talked about. But here, how the bondage takes place through the instrument of the modes, that will be described in the 14th chapter. So let's have an overview of the 14th chapter. So there are 27 verses in the 14th chapter. So the first 13 verses talk about how the soul is conditioned by the modes. Then verses 14 to 18 talk about the effect of conditioning by the modes. And then after that, 19 to 27 talk about transcending the modes. So, first section is how the soul is conditioned by the modes. So, like in several other chapters, like the 7th and the 9th chapters, the first section talks about glorification of the knowledge. Glorification of the knowledge means that this knowledge, how it is valuable, why it should be heard, what is the benefit. So in the 7th and 9th chapters, Krishna had done something similarly. 9th chapter, he says, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam. Or 7th chapter, he says, Inam Vakshami Asheshataha. That this is, I am giving complete knowledge, after knowing which nothing more is to be known. So like that, there are glorificatory passages. Even in the 10th chapter also, Krishna has said that, Jnananam Jnanamuttama. Sorry, no, Bhuyaiva Mahabaho Shrunume Paramam Vachaha. Paramam Vachaha, he had said, the supreme knowledge. So like that, and the glorification was done in several cases. So here also something similar. Then third and fourth verses talk about how the soul contacts matter. Then 5 to 9 talk about the how the modes bind the soul. And after that, 10 to 13 talk about identifying the modes dominating us by their principal characteristics. By their principal characteristics. Let's look at these one by one now. So 14.1, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Parambhuya Pravakshami Jnananam Jnanam Uttama Yajnatva Unaya Sarve Param Siddhim Itogataha. So Parambhuya Pravakshami, Parambhuya Pravakshami. Bhuya means again. Pravakshami is I am speaking. Parambhuya Pravakshami. Param is that highest, transcendental, that transcendental jnananam jnanam uttama. So that transcendental knowledge is actually the best among all forms of knowledge. Jnananam jnanam uttamam. So again I am speaking this, yajjnatva. And what happens? By knowing this, munaya sarve, the great sages, param siddhamito gataha. They have attained the supreme destination, param siddhi. What does it mean? Param siddhim ito gataha. So this knowledge, basically Krishna is saying that the glory of this knowledge is that by understanding this, the great sages have attained liberation. And he's using a significant word, bhuyaha. Why bhuyaha? Krishna has not talked about the three modes of material nature in detail before. But the analysis of the three modes culminates in a call for devotional service. And that devotional service Krishna has mentioned earlier. So, in technical details, this knowledge has not been spoken before. But, in terms of the conclusive action plan, the knowledge has already been spoken. So, in the 7th chapter, in the 9th chapter especially, then again in the 10th chapter, the call for devotional service has been consistent and insistent. And also, of course, no doubt in the 12th chapter, which is about Bhakti Yoga itself, and talks about multiple levels of Bhakti. So we will see that this chapter will end with two verses which establish the glory of Bhakti and the glory of Bhagavan. And that is what has been done in the whole Bhakti section. So that's why Bhuyaha. Bhuyaha means again. What I've spoken earlier, I'm speaking again now. Yajnatva, by knowing this, the great sages have attained liberation. So this knowledge is that which is used by Munayas. So now it's interesting. Krishna doesn't say yes jnanatva bhaktah sarve param siddhamito gataha. He says munaya sarve. Why? Because the bhaktas do not necessarily need this kind of analytical understanding of the three modes. They will have some basic philosophical understanding, but this chapter is going to talk about how the munis take to devotional service. Why the munis practice devotional service? Remember the 16th chapter. Remember the 13 to 18 chapters, the Jnana section of the Gita talks about how one can rise from the Jnana level to the Bhakti level. So one can rise from the Jnana level to the Bhakti level by the practice of devotional service by recognizing the potency of devotional service intellectually. So this 14th chapter will talk about the three modes of material nature. But after talking about the three modes, it will eventually come to the conclusion that one should practice devotional service. So one should practice devotional service. And that is the essential conclusion, which comes not because one has a spontaneous attraction to Krishna, but one recognizes that devotional service is the best means to gain liberation from the modes of material nature. Now, there's a significant difference between the two. It's like we have the levels fear, desire, duty and love, at which people can approach God. Similarly, there can be multiple levels at which people approach the Supreme Being. That means they may approach the Absolute Truth at the level of fear, desire, duty and knowledge. So like that, similarly people may approach the specific process of devotional service not out of love. They may approach it because of knowledge. So that means at the level of duty they understand. At the level of duty we understand, this is what I'm expected to do, this is what I'm supposed to do. So at the level of knowledge one understands, I'm trapped in material existence, I have to get out of material existence, and the way to get out of it is by practicing devotional service. And that's how one approaches the process of bhakti. So that is also fine, in the sense that yena kena prakarena mana krishna niveshayet. So that's why in this chapter the focus will be on analysis of the modes, how the bondage because of the modes is so complex and it's so difficult to break free from. And then one recognizes that by taking shelter of Krishna one can break free from this. So therefore munaya, it is the munis, those who are used to agitating their minds to try to come towards certain conclusions, those munis will attain the shelter of Krishna by taking to the process of devotional, will take the shelter of Krishna to attain transcendence from the modes. Munaya sarve. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that the knowledge explained in this chapter as proclaimed by the Supreme Lord is superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. Now this is interesting. Now it's interesting because Krishna has said this is bhuyaha, and then this is also jnananam jnana uttamam. So how do we understand this? Krishna says among all the knowledge that I have spoken, this is better than all other forms of knowledge. Superior to other forms of knowledge or other knowledge, other kinds of knowledge that I have given. And yet Krishna is saying, I am speaking this again to you. So if Krishna has spoken this earlier, then it is not superior to what has been given earlier. But if it is superior, if it is superior to what he has given earlier, then how can he be giving it again? So the point is that previously Krishna has given various kinds of knowledge. He has talked about karma yoga, he has talked about dhyan yoga, he has talked about jnana yoga, he has talked about various subject matters, and among those subject, many subject matters, one subject matter which he has also talked about is bhakti. Of course, he has talked about bhakti repeatedly in the bhakti section. So definitely the talking has been much more, but the point is that he has talked about it earlier. But among the various subjects that he has talked about, bhakti is the highest, and he has spoken it earlier. So he is repeating it, but he is also telling that this is better than all the other forms of knowledge that I have given. So in that way we can reconcile both these understandings. And param siddhim, by this one can attain the supreme destination. The supreme destination for the jnanis is Brahman, for the bhaktas it is the spiritual world. So depending on one's understanding of the Absolute Truth, one can attain either of the destinations. Now Krishna goes on and glorifies this knowledge further. Idam jnanam upashritya mamsa dharmyam agataha sarge pinopajayante pralayena vyathanti cha. So idam jnanam upashritya, if one takes shelter of Krishna, of this knowledge, it's interesting, we'll see, talk about this difference. Mamasa dharmyam agataha, one will attain sadharmyam, one will attain the same destination. Mama sadharmyam agataha, and sarge pinopajayante, sarge, at the beginning one will not, because of this, sarge pinopajayante, one will not be able to attain one will not attain or one will not have to undergo sargya at the time of creation, upajayante, one will not have to take birth again. And pralaye at the time of destruction, one will not have to navyathanti cha, one will not have to undergo destruction again. Pralaye navyathanti cha. So idam jnanam upashitya. And now here Krishna is talking about idam jnanam upashitya. So he is not saying that take shelter of me. He is saying by taking shelter of this knowledge you will attain a nature like mine. What is the meaning of this? That actually this the message of Krishna is also something which we can take shelter of. The philosophy is also to be taken shelter of. The philosophy is not to be approached merely for the sake of analysis from a controlling perspective. Normally when we study a subject, now for example, now if we have to solve a crossword puzzle, then yeah, I cracked it. Or when we have to give an exam and then there is some difficult question, I cracked it, I did it. So the whole idea is that there is a difficult problem to solve and then I solve it. And then I get that Ishwara Bhav, that sense of victory, that sense of controllership in the arena of spirit. In the arena of, sorry, not in the spirit, in the arena of spirit, in the arena of ideas. Yes, I did. That means it's actually intellectual sovereignty, intellectual supremacy, intellectual conquest. Not just of any ordinary subject, we are seeking intellectual conquest now when we study scripture of Krishna. And Krishna cannot be conquered by intellect. That is a wrong approach. And Krishna has so told earlier also, Naham Vedair, that I cannot be known merely by the study of the Vedas. So, actually, Jnanam Upashritya, when we take the, when we study the knowledge also, at that time, one studies it so that one can gain release and relief from the confusion of material existence, from the inevitable doubts, perplexities and dilemmas that we are presented with in material existence, and to find, okay, what is the way I should act ahead. So we approach this knowledge to take shelter of the knowledge. There is some people wear a crown on the head. Now a crown, if I am going out in the rains, a crown doesn't serve very well as an umbrella. A crown may slightly protect my head, but the crown is primarily meant for ornamental purposes. If I want protection from the rains, what I need is an umbrella. I don't need a crown at that time. So if we treat the spiritual knowledge like a crown on our head, then it won't act as an umbrella and you won't get relief from the elements by that knowledge. The relief from the elements is this: a crown cannot really offer much protection from the stormy rains or the scorching heat of the sun. It cannot offer that kind of protection, but umbrella can. So similarly, if we try to take the spiritual knowledge and try to make it an ornament for our own egos. I know so much. I know so much. And accordingly we try to practice. Then at that time we don't really get much benefit, because we are missing the whole point. The point is that we want to learn. We want to move forward. And we want to attain the supreme destination. What is that supreme destination? We want to attain love for Krishna. And love is not a matter of conquering. Love is a matter of giving. We give ourselves to another person in love. And then when we give ourselves, that person reciprocates. And then when two people give themselves to each other, that is the deepest love. So like that, the whole idea of love, there is conquest, no doubt. But then that is not, we don't go out to conquer. When we love, we actually say fall in love. We don't say conquer in love. You know, we fall in love. What does it mean? That means we let ourselves be conquered by love. So similarly, with respect to jnana, when we are trying to develop a relationship with Krishna, our goal is not to conquer Krishna with jnana. Our goal is to be conquered by Krishna's love. And to be conquered by Krishna's love, we want to offer ourselves to Him entirely. And we offer ourselves to Him in various ways. One way is through the intellect. So the intellect is also meant to be used as a means to surrender to Krishna, to attain His shelter. So, idam jnanam upashritya. So as devotees, when we take shelter of Krishna's message, we take shelter of the knowledge that He has given us. That is, all this I have talked from the bhakta perspective. From the jnani perspective, also, one tries to immerse oneself in knowledge. And vimarshanam, the word vimarshanam sounds like the English word immersion. Immersion means just put oneself completely within. So like that, vimarshanam, we absorb ourselves in knowledge. When we absorb ourselves in knowledge to vimarshanam, jnana vimarshanam, then by that we are able to go beyond to a large extent of material natures and its complications. So, idam jnana upashritya mamasa dharmyam agataha. I will attain, Krishna says, mamasa dharmyam. What is sadharmyam? Nature, the dharma as we know has many meanings. Here is an example where the word dharma means nature. So, just like Prabhupada has talked about in the Bhagavad Gita, that in his Bhagavad Gita introduction, that mamasa dharmyam agataha, he has talked about how how our dharma is eternal. He's talking about Sanatana dharma. Our goal is to love and serve, and that is our dharma, not our goal, that is our very nature itself. So our purpose, our perfection, our nature is to love and serve. And then when we direct that loving and serving nature towards Krishna, then our dharma becomes a Sanatana dharma. We act according to our eternal nature, and that brings us eternal happiness. So that sense of the word dharma, when Krishna uses the word dharma in many different ways. So he has used the word sarva dharma. So for example, dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So when he uses that word in 4.8, at that time, he is using it in terms of the social order, the socio-cultural spiritual order that is conducive for one's devotional advancement. So he uses the word dharma in that sense of the dharmic order in society, dharma samsthapanarthaya. And even Krishna uses the word dharma in 18.66, sarva dharman prityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. At that time he uses it in the sense of talking about sarva dharman prityajya, that give up the lower dharmas so that one can take shelter of the highest dharma. The highest dharma is bhakti. So in order to take shelter of the highest dharma, one should give up the lower dharma. And that will happen by the practice of bhakti. So that's what is being talked about over here. Mamasa dharmyam agataha. So there are different levels of, there are different usages of the word dharma. And Krishna has said that, here he is using the word mamasa dharmyam, that one will attain my dharma. That refers to, they will attain my nature. Mamasa dharmyam agataha. And then sargepi nupajayante sarga. At the beginning, there will be, at the time of creation, there will be no upajayante. Upajayante means there will be no destruction. There will be no taking birth again. And pralaye navithanti cha. And when there is destruction, there will be no bewilderment. That means basically one will go beyond bodily consciousness. When one goes beyond bodily consciousness, one doesn't have to take birth again in this material existence. Not only that, when we are not in bodily consciousness so much, we won't have to suffer so much at the time of death also, because we will go beyond the body to a large extent. So now, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that Prabhupada explains what it means this one who thus develops the spiritual qualities is not affected either by the creation or by the destruction of the world. So, because we attain the spiritual nature, we develop the spiritual qualities. So, therefore, one does not have to go through the cycle of birth and death. One's consciousness goes so high that one can transcend it. Now, the next section is going. What is the next section? Or next subsection? This is how the soul contacts matter. Mama yonirmad brahma tasmin garbham dadamyaham sambhavas sarvabhutanam tato bhavati bharata. So, mama yonirmad brahma. Now, here Krishna is using the word brahma to refer to material nature. We discussed earlier how the same word can have different meanings in the Gita. So, here the word brahma refers to material nature. So, mama yonirmad brahma. So, this Brahma is the yoni, the womb in which I give the garbha. Tasmin garbham dadamyaham. Aham, I, the dadami, I give the seed from which the womb is formed, the pregnancy takes place, the impregnation happens, and then sambhava sarva bhutanam. Then sambhava is to manifest, to become possible. All living beings. Ato bhavati bharata. So here, what is Krishna telling? Essentially, what is the connection? Krishna has glorified the knowledge in the previous two verses. He has caught Arjuna's attention. Oh, this knowledge is so important, that by which one can become free from the cycle of birth and death. So let me hear it. He has caught the reader's attention through this description. Now he is telling, beginning the knowledge and saying that actually right from the beginning of creation, right from the beginning of material existence, he plays a vital role. So, mama yonir mahat brahma. So, actually mahat brahma, that great brahma, tasmin garbham dadhamyaham. Garbham dadhamya. In that brahma, one impregnates oneself. So, Krishna impregnates himself. How do we understand by himself? Actually, ultimately, even material nature is his own energy. And the souls are his energy also. So in that sense, eko bahusyam, the one becomes many. To akamyataha, so that absolute truth desired, that absolute, so srijyataha, so akamyataha, so that absolute truth desired, and then that's absolute truth glanced, and then the creation, all of it took place. Asrijyata. So, basically, asrijyata means that creation begins. How does it begin? Sa aikshitaha, sa kamita, sa. So these are different small sutra-like verses from the Upanishads. Sa asrijyata, the absolute truth created. How? Sa aikshitaha, the absolute truth granted. Kamita, that the desired. So actually, this is talking about the beginning of creation, when the Lord glances up, when Mahavishnu glances up, and then collects all the souls who are then actually injected into material nature. So it is through the glance. So we know that at the start of the creation, the souls are brought into the material nature. The souls are withdrawn in the body of Mahavishnu at the end of creation, and at the start of creation once again, the souls are injected into material existence. And how are they injected into material existence? They are injected into material existence through the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead towards the material nature, which is in a balanced, inactive stage at that time. So, Pradhan to Mahatattva, it's a whole process of creation that happens, and then it becomes activated. And so basically the Lord injects his energy. When the Lord injects his energy, from there the creation moves forward. So that is what is being talked about over here, that the creation moves forward through the injection of the souls, through the vision of the Lord. So here the point of the vision is not being talked about. The simple point is made that Krishna is saying, I am the seed giver. So the material nature is garbha, and it is the yoni, it is the womb, and that womb I impregnate. So now Krishna in the next verse will more or less say the same thing, but it's with a slightly different emphasis. So Prabhupada gives the example that the standard example from traditional logic, the scorpion lays its eggs in piles of rice, and sometimes it says scorpion is born out of rice, but actually the eggs have come from elsewhere. The eggs have not come from the rice. So similarly, the souls may appear in material nature, but the souls do not come from material nature. The souls have got seeds from where they have come. From where they have come means that the souls have come from the Supreme Lord. So just like that means there's an apparent source and there is an actual source. So the apparent source of the scorpions is the rice, but the actual source of scorpions is the mother who has given the eggs. As Srila Prabhupada's statement, life comes from life. What does it mean? It means both things. That it means that life does not come from matter, although it appears that okay, there is a child, and the child is just biochemicals, and that's come alive. So it appears as if life has come from matter, but no, life comes from life. The child has come from the mother is living, and the soul has also come into the body of the mother from elsewhere. So the point of the statement is that the apparent source is not always the actual source. So matter is the root, R-O-U-T-E, through which consciousness manifests, and not R-O-O-T, root. It is not a source of consciousness. So just as a material nature doesn't become active independently on its own. That's the main point which is being told by this verse. So moving forward. Sarvayonishu kaunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahad yonir aham bija pradhapita. Sarvayonishu kaunteya, all living beings o kaunteya murtaya sambhavantiya. So Krishna used the word sambhava in the previous verse also. They become possible, they manifest. Murtaya, there are various forms. The word, we use the word murti. Murti, we refer to the deity form of the Lord. So the form Murtaya, Amurtaya, is non-manifested. So Murtaya Sambhavantiya, the various forms of the living beings become manifest. Tasam Brahma Mahadiyonir. Tasam Brahma Mahadiyonir is that the Mahadiyoni, that is the Brahma, aham bija pradhapita. So Krishna makes it very clear that I am the seed giving father. So we may say that the previous verse and this verse are saying the same thing. That actually, what is the difference between the previous verse and this verse? Both are talking about the same thing, that how there is a garbha, and then that garbha, how there is a yoni, and that yoni is impregnated by the Supreme Lord. If you look at the focus of the two verses is different. The focus is here it is sarvayonishu kaunteya. There it is. In the previous verse, the focus was just on bringing the point that the Lord is a factor in the whole thing. Whereas we do not see the. So there mama yoni. So mama yonir mahat brahma. So it is I who impregnate, and therefore after all the living beings become manifest. Now here is saying that all living beings are manifest by the grace of the Supreme Lord. How is that grace? Through the seed of the Lord gives. Bija pradhapita, bija pratahapita. So now let's look at the purport. So and this Prabhupada writes in the purport. Everywhere there are living entities, within the earth, there are living entities, even within water and within fire. So now all these appearances are due to the material nature and Krishna's seed-giving process. So Krishna's seed-giving process. So how does all this happen? It happens by a certain method. That method is Krishna's arrangement. Through Krishna's arrangement is the whole system is there. But Krishna's intervention is there also in that system through the injection of the souls, through his vision. And that's how the whole process takes off. And now Prabhupada writes that they come out according to their past misdeeds. That means that whatever karma the soul had done in the past, accordingly the souls get bodies now. What now? Krishna is not specifically talking about the birth of children during normal times. He is talking about the process of creation throughout, at the start of the creation. That means throughout means where all living beings are created. Sarva yoni shu kaunteya. What this refers to is all living beings. All living beings are manifested over here, and at the start of creation, and the whole process of creation is described in the Bhagavatam in the second canto. The emphasis is that this whole process of creation happens step by step by step. And when it happens step by step, it moves forward and it allows one to take one's steps forward in spiritual life. One understands the creation, one understands the glory of the Supreme Lord, one understands His supervisive coordination and controllership, and one feels inspired to surrender to Him. So the Bhagavad Gita is only giving the skeletal outline of this process. It's not going to go into any technical details. So what it says over here is that actually the material nature is like the mother, the Lord is like the father, and both of them together bring about the creation. So this is also this is talking about at the start of the whole creation, and at the start of a life of a new Brahma, what happens at that time? That the Lord, so the Brahmaji's body comes out. The Brahmaji comes out of the body of Garbhodaksha Vishnu, and before that, the universes in which Garbhodaksha manifests, they come out from the body of the Mahavishnu. So at the stage of that Mahavishnu, and from that point onwards, the creation begins. There is a contact of the souls with the material nature through the vision of the Supreme Lord, and that's how the creation starts going ahead. Now then, Krishna will now start describing about the modes. So we describe, so verses 5 to 9 will talk about how the modes bind the soul. So how does the soul contact matter? It was through the insemination by the Lord. Now we will discuss about how the modes bind the living entity. Sattvam rajastamaiti guna prakriti sambhava nibadnanti mahabaho dehe dehinam avyam. So sattvam rajastama iti, that sattva, raja and tama, these three are there, these three modes. Guna prakriti sambhavaha, prakriti sambhavaha, they are born from material nature, and when they are born from material nature, what happens? Nibadnanti mahabaho, nibadnanti mahabaho. Mahabaho means this, that Arjuna, you are extremely powerful. But no matter how powerful you are, you also, including all living beings, they are all nibadnanti, they are bound. Dehe dehinam avyayam. Dehe dehinam avyayam refers to the fact that dehe dehinam, that the soul becomes bound to the body, avyaya, it's imperishable. It doesn't get old, it doesn't get deteriorated. So Krishna is introducing the concept of three modes over here. And he's telling that these three modes, sattvam, rajastam, iti, gunaha prakriti sambhava, they are born from material nature. When they are born from material nature, they bind the soul. No matter how powerful the soul may be, the soul becomes bound. Now, what exactly are the modes? We use the word modes very frequently within devotional discussions. But what exactly are the modes? Are they things? You know, is it that, you know, just like I can see the stool, I can touch a chair. So are the modes things like that? Or are they just concepts? So actually the modes are not just concepts, they are things. But they are not gross things, they are subtle things. Generally we often do not think of subtle things as things. But they are, when we talk about something as a concept, the word often concept is used in the sense of a convenient fiction. And okay, I think about things like this. Now, whether they exist or not, who knows about it? We don't really care about it. But that's how it is seen to be. So what we do is we focus on the idea that this is not just a concept, this is an actual ontological thing. Ontological means connected with existence. That is something which really exists. It exists, and what that we have to do is we have to gain harmonize our intellectual conception with it. Then we will be able to understand how it is. So it's like, you know, there is a territory, and in that territory, below the surface, if we dig down, there is a gold mine. That the area is a gold mine, and there is gold underneath. So now it's not just a concept. This area is a gold mine area. No, there is gold over there, but I have to dig deep enough to reach that gold. So similarly, there are certain concepts. That means we have to think about them, we have to get a conceptual understanding of them, but that doesn't mean that they are only concepts. They are actual things, they have their own existence in their own right. But their existence is not gross, it is not physical, as is the existence of, say, a table or a chair or a computer. Their existence is more subtle. And being subtle, that existence has to be perceived accordingly. And that perception accordingly is through the arena of understanding, through the arena of focusing our intellect to go below the surface. Just like I have to take my drill or spade or whatever device I'm using for digging to go below the surface. So they are all subtle. Now, what do the modes do? Let's look at this ones. Modes are subtle forces that shape the interaction between gross matter and consciousness through the root of subtle matter. So let's understand this more carefully. They are the subtle forces. The whole concept of modes exists in the level of the subtle reality. It's not a gross physical reality. Are the subtle forces that shape what? Shape the interaction between gross matter and consciousness. Gross matter is physical matter. So, for example, how we act. Somebody may wave the fist angrily. Somebody may, some different people will react differently in different situations. Somebody may just, when a person gets angry, person may wave the fist in anger and swipe, trying to hit somebody. Another person, when that person becomes angry, may just shrink in depression and try to forget one's worry, one's misery through drinking. So there are different people, or somebody may try to seek wisdom and try to gain some sort of acceptance and understanding. So that's how things move forward, and different people respond differently. If there's a movie theater and suddenly there is a fire inside the movie theater, and when there is a fire, now most people, they just scream and panic and rush off towards the exit. And as they rush off towards the exit like that, there may well be a stampede. Stampede means that people may just crush each other. If somebody falls down, people are so desperate to themselves go out that they don't even care about whether they are hurting somebody or not. They just stamp on people and go away. That's how a stampede happens. So when a stampede happens like that, then the people are wildly in the mode of passion. Some people may be in the mode of ignorance, and then they just may get petrified. Petrify means to become like a stone, completely frozen. Can't even scream. Panic struck. And then some people, they look around, think, oh, there's the fire extinguisher. They rush to the fire extinguisher and then extinguish the fire. So these are examples of reaction and passion, ignorance and goodness. So in passion, one just acts without thinking much. In ignorance, one just becomes frozen, immobilized. And in goodness, one thinks and acts. So now, what is that makes the difference? It is the modes the people are in. Of course, why certain people are in certain modes, that's a whole different subject which we'll come to later. But so again, that means that shape the interaction of consciousness and gross matter. So gross matter is, okay, I see the fire and then I respond to it. What is my response? I run away from there in desperate frenzy. So why does that happen? That's because the moods affect in a particular way. So the root, there is a root, the staircase, and there are the moods. So to understand this concept of moods comprising the roots. See, now if there is a 10-story building, or as you, there is a ten-story building. So there now there may be certain staircase which are like just straight down. There may be certain staircase which are generally people don't keep long stairs straight down, because if somebody falls, that can be disaster. There are 100, 200, 500 steps. Generally, there are long staircases. They are kept maybe 10-15 steps like this. Then there is a break, and then there are 10-15 steps like this. Then there are 10-15 steps like this. Then there are 10-15 steps like this. So, therefore, there are different ways in which this can be created. And then when it's created in different way, another way could be that there is artistically, aesthetically round and round stairs. You know, they may be a little more difficult to navigate for people because it's round and round, but there's some aesthetic appeal to it. So basically now there are upper floors, there are lower stores, and the way to go down upper and lower stores is through the staircase. So the staircase is basically the route. But now just because the staircase is there, that staircase doesn't determine whether a person will go up or a person will go down. A person can go both ways. A person can also go laterally at the same level, also move left and right at the same level. But essentially the staircase are the route by which a person will go up or down. So like that, our consciousness, there is an interaction between gross matter and consciousness. And that interaction happens through the medium of the modes. Through the medium of the modes means that... It's like if there are these three predefined staircases, and depending on whichever staircase one chooses, then afterwards, once one has chosen the particular staircase, one will move along that way. Similarly, once we choose the mode of passion, then we will act passionately. We can't avoid that afterwards. Once we've chosen the mode of passion, we will act accordingly. So same way, once we choose a particular kind of behavior, accordingly we will act. So let's move forward and understand this concept further. I'll explain this concept of stairs again as we move forward, but let's get introduced to the three modes right now. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakashakam anamayam sukhasangena badnati jnana sangena chanagha. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat. Among them, sattva is nirmala. Nirmala is pure. Mala is impure. Nirmala is pure. The Srimad Bhagavatam is called as Amala Puran. Amala Puran means the Puran that does not have any spots. The Puran that is spotlessly pure. So like that, Tatra Sattvam Nirmalatvat. Nirmalatvat means that this is that which is Nirmala, that is very spotlessly beautiful. Prakashakam Anamayam. Prakasuna. How is it nirmalatva? That is for the extent prakashakam, it's illuminating. Anamayam, it frees from sin. What does it mean, this mode frees? Actually, once one chooses a particular mode, then one's behavior is largely accordingly directed. Of course, we choose it, but once we choose it, then we act accordingly. So, then that means when one chooses the mode of goodness, nirmalatvat prakashakam anamayam happens, illuminating. Things become clear. One who is in the mode of goodness, that person is a seeker of knowledge, is a seeker of understanding, a seeker of wisdom. And because one is a seeker of wisdom like this, prakashakam anamayam, when one seeks knowledge and one understands it to some extent, that, you know, actions have consequences, and therefore I should choose the action which will bring me good consequences, not actions which will cause me bad consequences. Therefore, anamayam. Therefore, one does not act in sinful ways, and that's how one becomes free from sinful reactions. Now, because of this mode, so on one side, this seems to be a positive description of the mode, which are quite attractive description. One says, oh, that means mode of goodness is very good. No, but Krishna has told that All the three modes bind the soul to material existence, and that's what he's describing over here. So, sukha sangena badhanati jnana sangena chanagha. That one becomes bound by sukha and one becomes bound by jnana. Sukha and jnana, that's how one becomes bound. So, the prakashakam part, because the soul is illuminated, so that illumination leads to jnana. And that leads to jnana sangha. One feels that, oh, I am cleverer than others. I know more than others. And because one feels like that, I am cleverer than others, I know more than others, that's what causes bondage. So, sukha sangena badanati. And because one is anamayam, because one is relatively free from sins and sinful reactions, so sufferings is also less. Sufferings are also less, and then one gets a sense of happiness in being situated peacefully, and that is also a cause of bondage. So, Srila Prabhupada would give the examples of different kinds of shackles. And then if there are iron, somebody might be bound by iron shackles, and somebody might be bound by gold shackles. So basically, the fundamental reality is that both are bound. What shackles are there doesn't matter, but still it is bondage. So like that, in this material world, there is bondage, and one has to seek liberation. And so when one has to seek liberation, at that time, how does one seek liberation? Because, or rather, how does one seek? One seeks liberation by the process of devotional service. The process of devotional service is the process by which one will get free from all the kinds of shackles, whichever they may be, as has been discussed, as we will discuss in the later chapters. But here, Prabhupada explains in the purport that the poet, the scientist, the philosopher, they are often more evolved in their thinking. They try to think of deeper concepts, and they try to gain understandings which are not easily available for people. So that search for deeper understandings, it is not necessarily always spiritual, but it is not superficial material also. People are looking for towards deeper material things, and as they look towards deeper material things, they start getting elevated by that, they start getting attracted towards Krishna by that. Sukha sangena badhanati jnana sangena cha anagha. Jnana sangena. That one gets sukha and one uses jnana. And by these two, one becomes bound. So the mode of goodness is in many ways good. Prabhupada talks about the Brahmana being mode of goodness. So the Prabhupada also makes it very clear. There is no likelihood of liberation or being transferred to the spiritual world. So repeatedly one may become a philosopher, a scientist or a poet, and repeatedly become entangled in the same disadvantages of birth and death. But due to the illusion of the material energy, one thinks that that sort of life is pleasant. One thinks that life is pleasant. Then Rajoragatmakam Vidhi Trishna Sangha Samudbhavam Tannipadnati Kaunteya Karma Sangena Dehinam. So Rajo Ragatmakam Vidhi. The mode of ignore passion, Rajo Ragatmakam, Atmakam, its essence, it is born of, it comprises of what? Raga. So the word raga here means attachment. So what mode of passion does is it brings attachment. Trishna Sangha Samudbhavam. So attachment to what one has and Trishna for what one doesn't have. What does it mean? That means if I have a car and I'm passionately attached to my car, but at the same time, while being passionately attached, I want something better also. Yeah, I want that car, I want that. Trishna Sangha Samudbhavam. And Tan Nibadnati Kaunteya, thereby one becomes bound. Karma sangena dehinam. So why it is to karma bondage? By karma, because to protect what we have and to gain what we don't have, one has to work. So work. If I have a very attractive, majestic house, then if I am attached to that, then I have to work to maintain it. And another nature is that I will want a bigger house. I want better facilities in that. And for that also I have to work. So karma. Tannibadnati kaunteya. nibadnati when Kaunteya one becomes bound, how? Karma sangena. So attachment. So Prabhupada explains that generally sex life is characteristic of the mode of passion, and in that there is attachment between male and female. And by that male and female, Prabhupada would often quote the verse Pumsa Striya Mithuni Bhavametam Tayor Mithorudaya Granthimahum Atograha Kshetha Sutapravitair Junasya Mohoyam Aham Mameti Junasya Mohoyam Aham. That among the living entities, the moha, among the people, that aham, and this I am the body and all this is mine. How does this come about? From the, in the mode of passion, the male, because there is bodily consciousness, so there is naturally male-female attraction. From that male-female attraction, then there is the raga and trishna. Yes, I want more. So when a man and woman come together, they want a house, and then they want to expand. You know, then we have to have a source of income, and we have to have this and that and that and that. And so many things are needed. And in that way, one's material existence becomes more and more complicated. So karma, and even in Prabhupada would quote even the economist Malthus, he say that actually a family is the primary impetus for people for work. Now his idea was that, you know, that when people want to improve their family life, then, and they see the possibility for improving their family life, then they will work hard and they will think, yes, let me do this, and that way they will try to improve their life. And that's how karma sangena vadanati. So for the sake of improving the family life, they will work. Now actually this is integrated even into dharma artha kama system of the Vedic culture also, that when people want artha, they want, people primarily want artha and kama. They want artha for the sake of kama. They want to fulfill their desires, and that's why they want artha. And but this, all this is made within a, all these arrangements for fulfilling this are made within a dharmic framework. One does dharma, and then one artha and kama will also come. Trishna sanga samudbhavam. So Prabhupada makes a significant point in the purport that modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of the mode of passion. Formerly, the advanced condition was considered to be in the mode of goodness. So what does this refer to? Modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of the mode of passion. That means now today, you know, a person who has perverted standard, a person who can exhibit, you know, I have a girlfriend, I have a boyfriend, I have a big house, I have this, I have that. That is the person who is considered to be the most successful in today's standard. So people's status, people's value, social value is determined by how much they are successful according to the definition of, given by the mode of passion. See, these modes will give us different definitions of success. In the mode of goodness, the definition of success will be different. In the mode of goodness, the definition of success will be how much knowledge does one have, how much wisdom does one have, how much freedom from sinful action does one have. That's what will be considered as the definition of success. In mode of passion, how much power does one have? Now that is, we see that, say, as the mode of passion is increasing in America, you know, the president of America may have some illicit sexual affairs. But if that president is able to keep the economy going well, people say it doesn't matter. Why? Because their definition of success is not related in the mode of goodness, in that a person should have good character. Their definition of success is, yes, you know, you enjoy and let us enjoy also. You know, as long as you give us our artha and kama, whether you are having dharma or not, it doesn't matter at all. You know, when there is relatively mode of goodness, the artha and kama is of course required in this world, and that is also valued, but then there has to be dharma. So then dharma will lead to artha and kama, that is virtuous. So Prabhupada says that earlier the standard of the definition of success was different, and now the definition of success is different. So as devotees, if we live in a materialistic society and adopt their definition of success, then we can't really practice devotional service seriously, because there will be a cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance, we'll have two different concepts which are colliding in our mind. According to spiritual conception, that, you know, make you become more and more attached to Krishna is the definition of success. But according to the conception which you are getting from society, you know, becoming more wealthy, more powerful, more this, more that, that is the definition of success. Now a devotee may get that, and devotee may pursue that also within limits. within the limits of not giving up on spiritual commitments. But the point is that devotee doesn't consider that alone as the definition of success. So as society becomes more and more passionate, its definition of success changes. And the great danger of modern society is that not only is it materialistic, but it has made materialism as the standard of its definition of success. And that is what is erroneous. And we'll discuss this more in our future classes when we talk about the further characteristics of the three modes. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.